at. If we're talking about grants, where we give money to people with no expectation of getting it back, we are going to need to do some further analysis on how much grant money we could give without making Wall Street and the bondholders upset. I don't know today. If we're talking about deals where we can get our principal back at some point in the future, then I would say that, you know, unlimited is maybe not the right term, but a substantial amount of that money could go to special needs housing. If we're going to get our principal back at some point with a below market return, you know, it would depend on how much and how you would structure each deal. You know, the amount of money would be available to do these. Obviously, you physically could only do a certain number of deals at a time, given the both the personnel resources that you would have. And these deals typically are not 30-day deals. It typically takes quite a while to plan, finance, construct these deals. So there's a physical limitation. In terms of dollar limitation, I think if we told Wall Street we were going to give $194 million away, we'd have a problem. But I don't know where that comfort level would be. In terms of how you guarantee that it gets done, I'm not sure I have the answer to that either. You can't legislate morality, you can't legislate people's behavior. I think maybe we've come full circle to what we were talking about earlier in terms of clearly a commitment of the board in all of this is very important. The boards of these corporations, and I know our board is very conscious of our changing role. We've had a lot of discussions in the last 60 days about that. Clearly, the board, as it relates to Alaska Housing, would have to drive that process. And just as commissions are driven by staff, our board obviously has its own ideas, but it also is receptive to staff's pushing issues. And again, I think we're very much in a state of flux, moving away from that middle-class giveaway.
Mr. Chairman, just following up again on the first question, if AHFC had no unrestricted net assets that were available, would it still be able to access capital through the secondary market?
Well, again, it would very much depend on the structure of the deal. If we were having to go out and borrow the money to do these projects, then clearly it would be very difficult to go out and borrow money where you had no identifiable source of repayment. It would be very difficult to go borrow money to give it away.
But for traditional home mortgage loans?
As long as you can meet the secondary mortgage requirements of those loans, whether it be private mortgage insurance, FHA, whatever that might be, I would imagine that program should be able to continue. Again, I would defer to Mark Cameron on those, what I consider more technical issues.
Thank you.
Representative Ulmer.
Well, following up on that, how much of the $194 million in unrestricted revenues would actually be necessary to go out to the bond market for another issue? I mean,
We don't know that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Ulmer. That's the problem. We don't know what the definitive answer to a lot of these questions are, which makes it very difficult, because we don't know at what point we step over that line. We don't know at what point money is appropriated and the bond market loses it on us. We just don't know, and there's really no way of knowing, because markets change. I mean, they change from day to day. Perceptions change. I can't give you a number that says you can take this, but beyond that, we've got a problem. And again, that number is floating daily.
Well, wouldn't past experience be at least something of a measure? I mean, haven't there been times in the past that you've had less than $194 million in unrestricted revenues and you've been able to successfully go out to the market?
I don't know the answer to that. Mark Cameron would be able to tell
you
that.
I would like to know the answer to that. I'd also like to know at what level you collateralize your bond issues.
He, again, is more qualified than I.
And can you give me some idea of your projections into the future as to what you expect to generate by way of retained earnings over the next few years?
He's got all those numbers.
Okay, great. Thank you. I would like answers to those questions. They don't have to be today, but at some point, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? If not, thank you. Oh, Representative Kopanen.
I notice you generally operate by federal regulations in a number of areas. When the public housing unit in Anchorage was being demolished and ran into the asbestos problem, which set of standards did you use for the cleanup, the federal or the more stringent state standards?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Copeland, I really don't know the answer to that. I think maybe Representative Brown.
I was
going to
say that project was handled by ASHA rather than AHFC, Mr. Hewitt.
You mean AHFC rather than ASHA?
No, it was handled by ASHA. The state housing actually did the asbestos removal part of that project.
And we provided funds, as I understand.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I noticed there are a number of other bills that purporting to fund various projects from your so-called surplus. So have you made any comments in regard to those?
Mr. Chairman, Representing Copeland, yeah, we have. We don't like them. And as I mentioned earlier, that was one of the reasons why we had to yank this veterans bond issue yesterday, that the volume and breadth of those bills started to make people nervous as to what does this really mean? Because when you total them all up, $100 million, $80 million, $4 million, change the board, people say, hey, what's going on?
Do you know where the various numbers came from?
No, I don't. I have no idea. Some of them, I think, were pulled out of the sky.
Somewhere, but some of them seem to be based on some knowledge of internal numbers. That's why I was wondering.
Thank you, Mr. Hewlett. Rob Gamble. About Gene Bunn. Okay, Eric Wolford.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Eric Wolford. I'm the bond counsel for HFC and have had that job now for some 19 years, was involved in the original construction of the legislation back in 1971. Mr. Chairman, the prime feature of the bills, plural, and House Bill 152 in particular, that is causes the board to oppose it and AHFC to oppose it, is the substantial change which it will represent in the state's attitude towards HFC as a financing entity in public bond markets. Housing throughout the state is, of course, a great value. Housing for different sectors of the community is an emergent social issue. It's submitted that the ability of the major financing entity of the state of Alaska to continue to access capital markets is an extremely important issue for the state of Alaska and all its people. HFC is by far the largest issuer of debt in the state, having issued in excess of $8 billion of debt and having approximately $3.5 billion outstanding. Since the expansion of its financing activities in 1980, it's become a major capital issuer of public debt in the United States and has therefore changed the financing market's attitude towards the state of Alaska as a source for investment. The market, for good or ill, and whatever you think of investment bankers, the market, which is represented by literally tens of thousands of bondholders, perceives that the state of Alaska has devised an efficient and effective bond issuing entity, and that this entity has enjoyed the support of the Alaska legislature for many years. The HFC represents a further opportunity to the state of Alaska and to the legislature as the most efficient and effective financing entity it has created, and it is submitted, has been created by many other states. It represents a possibility for further access of funds in the bond markets beyond even for its current housing purposes. It is not inconceivable in future years that this financing entity could be seen to support public infrastructure improvements beyond housing. It's foreseeable over the next 5 to 10 years that the ability of a major financing entity of which every Alaskan can feel proud could be of immeasurable importance as the state suffers downturns in oil revenues. Therefore, its ability to access public bond markets is to me a major plus for the state and something which legislators and people rightfully would seek to enhance and support. Other states, Mr. Chairman, have been faced with the desire to extract funds from their state housing finance entities. Three states in particular are the states of the Commonwealth of Virginia, the state of New York, and the state of Connecticut. Those extractions of funds have occurred within the last 1 or 2 years as those eastern states have suffered economic deterioration as their mortgage markets fell and real estate values diminished, much as they started to do in Alaska starting in 1985. It was felt in those states that it was inappropriate to legislate an extraction of dollars from those financing entities. Dollars, amounts, and not inconsiderable amounts were transferred, but those transfers were consensual by agreement without any legislative amendments. It's submitted, Mr. Chairman, that this is the appropriate approach with this financing entity of the state. Investors, in fact, rely on the independent balance sheet of the corporation and on the fact that the corporation owns its assets. Investors rely on the fact that the state has created an independent financing vehicle through the board of directors to manage those assets and to determine appropriate levels of bond security and appropriate expenditures and loan programs. Investors, with respect, Mr. Chairman, do not expect nor welcome any usurpation of the activities of the board of directors of this independent financing entity by the Alaska legislature. And this includes, Mr. Chairman, any bill which indeed would legislate on the subject matter. Any such bill, any impairment of the credibility of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, could well foreclose consideration of the corporation and other state agencies as vehicles for financing a multitude of new projects or purposes. The bottom line, Mr. Chairman, is that if investors determine that HFC no longer has essentially independent control over its assets, it is unlikely that this corporation or other major financing agencies in the state can play a major role in meeting the capital needs of the state in future years. Mr. Chairman, there are two other features I'd like to speak to. I don't read, by the way, the 1985 Attorney General's opinion as directed towards saying that legislation is necessary for a voluntary transfer of monies from HFC, a consensual transfer by the Board of Directors to the state. I read that opinion as I think it was directed towards the issue of whether or not a mandated appropriation was permissible. Also, the other feature I think which is of note and which will be addressed by Mr. Cameron in the legislation, House Bill 152, is the requirement that in any bond covenant or pledge, reference must be specifically made to the requirement of legislative appropriation. The fact that the corporation is able to borrow money on its general obligation assets, its full faith and credit pledge, is a very considerable enhancement to its ability to access public bond markets. A specific warning contained in any bond covenant or any bond pledge that, in fact, it was liable to appropriation with respect to those assets, and not the, and that pledge, it seems to me, would deter and cast a cloud on its ability to make those pledges in the public bond market. Mr. Chairman, it is certainly not welcome to come up here and to throw rocks at a bill which has been clearly the product of lengthy hearings and discussion, and represents in many respects a breakthrough in thinking on the subject matter. But from a technical point of view, the bill does create and would create the anomalies of a new entity, a commission, if you will, engrafted on and acting as a governing body of two continuing corporate entities. And I would say, to say the least, this is an unusual corporate structure, one which is has the potential of creating legal confusion. There would be, if you will, an executive director for the commission. There would be a staff for the commission. The commission only exists legally as the governing body, if you will, of two other entities, at least both of which would have an executive director and their own staff. There is therefore no actual certainty as to the there's no actual certainty as the actual governing body of HFC. The bill says, well, let's create a 5 or 6 or 7 person executive committee to overcome this question, and those executive committees would act. But regrettably, from a technical point of view, all the members of the commission remain members of the executive committee. The final comment I'll make is on the language of the Housing Trust Fund, which uses the phrase, this may have been the subject of an amendment which I noted this morning, that all money is not necessary for the financial integrity of the corporation would be available for transfer and appropriation. That phrase, not necessary for financial integrity, I submit is too general and nonspecific to be an efficient measure of what should be retained. It's essentially a subjective phrase. One person might determine that a very high level of assets should be retained to maintain financial integrity. Other persons might say that financial integrity really is a much lesser standard. So I think that phrase and those criteria certainly need work to determine what detailed criteria, in fact, represent those things which should be retained before transfers can be made. The corporation's dividend plan, as well as 163, contain criteria which are efficient and effective criteria on that subject matter. In summary, then, the value that the corporation seeks to have maintained is the value which is submitted is about as interesting in many cases as plumbing to people. The value of being able to continue to finance and access capital markets efficiently, effectively, over a period of years when access to capital markets for our needs will become increasingly necessary. Other states have faced this problem. Other states have faced demands from so-called surplus state housing finance entities. Those states, as I've recited, have arrived at an accommodation with those entities that there was a consensual agreement to pay over monies. It's submitted that from the point of view of achieving the result, as well as protecting the financial structure and ability to access capital markets, that this sort of program is the one that this committee should adopt.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wolford, what is it exactly in this legislation that leads you to say that it represents a substantial change in attitude by the state toward HFC? As I drafted the legislation, and it's my certainly intent that all the current responsibilities, duties, covenants, requirements, and everything of the existing corporation continue. I don't know if you might be more comfortable if we called it a board instead of a commission. I mean, really, as I see it, what we would be doing is retaining all the current members of the HFC board and adding 4 other members who, and that this new board would have or rather it's in the legislation called a commission, would have broader responsibilities than they now have. But they are similar to, if not identical to, the authorities and responsibilities that AHFC already has and that I think they would continue to have under this legislation. And I'd also call your attention to Section 19 that says nothing is intended to interfere with or impair a contract, right, liability, bond, note, or other obligation of ASHA or AHFC that exists and has been entered into in the past.
I think I have a twofold answer to that. One is that clearly the commission is a restructuring of an existing corporate entity under a form of a commission with an entirely new board and body, and with the confusion of a relationship of a new separate entity engrafted on an existing corporate body called Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The second and more important change in attitude, if you will, is that the legislature is dealing substantively with the assets of this agency, even though admittedly, I perceive and recognize that the effort has been made in the legislation to have that treatment of assets be subject to determinations of the board of directors as to whether those assets are available. I submit it's a change of approach to a subject matter and a substantial change of approach.
But you don't, are you implying or saying that that's improper for the legislature to deal with those public resources through legislation?
Not at all improper, Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown. I'm saying that the legislature, I'm simply trying to put the case that there is a substantial value that's being dealt with. There is a social value of expanding into new housing areas. There is the other value of continuing ability to access capital markets. And the value of continuing to access capital markets is, to my mind, detracted from, put in jeopardy by this bill. It is certainly not improper to deal with that. You are here to weigh those values, clearly, but I suggest that there is a negative connotation to the treatment of HFC, which the commission bill represents on the basis of the ability to finance publicly.
And does that stem from the organizational issue or from the appropriation of the reserves issue?
I think both is the answer, yes.
Representative Copeland.
Thank you. I think most of us who are dealing with this question have been supportive and protective of both ASHA and housing finance over the years. But there are and have been continual areas that have not been met by either agency. This is one of the reasons for the proliferation of the other approaches, and which have in past led to general fund use of monies to meet the needs that neither agency have seen fit to deal with, even where they have the possibility. One of them, co-housing, self-management for senior citizens and students, non-conforming housing, and living in Fairbanks, I have to tell you, any place you build in Fairbanks it tends to be non-conforming, and rural housing problems and the like. And so there's an accumulated sense of frustration that even what we consider to be the public interests for which the agencies are set up are not being met. So the question arises, what mechanism is to be used? I get the sense from what you said that actually if you had thought of the idea of a trust fund, if the board had thought, you would have come to us to put it in a statute to provide you the statutory protection needed for that fund. And it just depends on who initiates it. So, you know, what sort of mechanism do you see? Whom do you listen to in regard to the demands and the needs in housing?
Well, I certainly can sympathize with Mr. Chairman, with the representative's frustration. My the goal of my little talk, if you will, was to put to the committee in sharper terms the value of continuing to access public bond markets unimpeded by an agency which, for better or ill, as however you view it, has operated, has had an incredible success in that area, and has really helped to put Alaska in a preeminent position in public bond markets. And I haven't heard that value discussed. That value may be a lesser value in committee persons' minds than other values, but I think it needs to be discussed, and I think it needs there needs to be sensitivity to whatever approach that is tried, that is sought to get the result that is sought from the agency, keeps in mind this sensitivity to maintaining the ability to finance of an agency which has done a preeminent job and which, incidentally, can continue to do so for other purposes.
But the access to the bond market, that particular access, is a value only to the state only if it serves stated public needs. I mean, for that matter, you wouldn't get IRS exemption
sure.
if it weren't. So how do we explicate the public needs as we see them?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman and Representative, I hear already that forthcomingness that you seek coming as the Chief Operating Officer indicates the proposal that went before the board last meeting and indeed is being advanced at the next meeting, as well as numerous plans which he has indicated to you for a more expanded public role.
Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Most financial institutions, especially in the last 7 or 8 years with the deterioration of the real estate mortgage market and other large debt financing, they're judged primarily on their ratio of reserve or equity or whatever you want to call it to their total assets or liabilities. Now, if Alaska Housing Finance was subjected to an involuntary reduction of this reserve, do you feel that the bond market would judge this firm, Alaska Housing Finance, the same as it would a financial institution that had an involuntary or uncontrollable reduction in their reserve ratio to? Is this reserve? We've been trying to tempt here. How much can we afford to lose? I'm talking about is there any area that we can afford to lose that's uncontrolled or involuntary by the board that wouldn't be interpreted negatively?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate Representative Sharp the question, and indeed, unfortunately, the answer can't be as you might have expected, crisp and precise as to what the level might be. If I may suggest, the means are extremely important. The perception of independence, the perception of the board of directors making the determination is a very important feature of bond market perception. Is this indeed really an independent entity that's been borrowing for 20 years without getting a vote of the people because it's independent? Or, in fact, is it going to become something that the legislature begins to treat as part of state assets? Which, of course, what is the level? And the worst case would be a straight appropriation of assets, which the Attorney General, I think, has said is improper, and which would completely ignore the corporate existence of the agency. And that would, seems to me, pretty clearly put us in a downgrade mode right away. Anything less than that is really a matter of market sensitivity and perception. What the story in the Wall Street Journal looks like, and if you will, when that financial story is printed, it's I'm sorry to be vague and indefinite, but one can't be precise in that sort of realm.
Mr. Chairman, just one follow-up question: is it possible then that a negative impact that would cause an increase in the cost of borrowing by Alaska Housing Finance could, in fact, more than wipe out the benefit of whatever's taken out for other purposes?
Certainly.
Thank you. Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Isn't private sector financing available in the home market, home mortgage market, at the same, if not lower, cost than what HFC is providing? I guess I've been told that, you know, Ginnie Mae is certainly comparable right now.
Mark Cameron is far better on rates than I am. The corporation does have its veterans program, which was canceled for Tuesday, which has a very substantial and attractive interest rate reduction below market rates. That its regular first-time home buyers tax-exempt program also has a substantial reduction. Those are tax-exempt bonds. I'm not sure whether, but I believe that there are incrementally better rates available in the conventional bond market, conventional mortgage market now. Is that?
I think they're right about the same.
The point of my question, I guess, is just to illustrate that, as has been said earlier today, the situation is quite a bit different today than it was when we put a lot of state assets into AHFC. The purpose was to, in fact, buy down the price of mortgages for the average Alaskan. Matter of fact, you know, for middle-income and upper-income Alaskans.
Sure.
And now that the private sector is available to offer private mortgages at least competitive rates, it's sort of shifted the focus. The goal is not to get access to capital markets. The goal is to achieve some public purpose and to provide, I guess, financing to be able to achieve that purpose. So it seems to me that this is a real healthy discussion that needs to take place about what is the public purpose to be served by having the state's assets invested in AHFC. And I don't think that the legislature feels comfortable simply having that debate take place within the corporation, not given the fact that it's committed $1 billion of state assets to that corporation. I think that's part of what's going on here. I think the idea behind the bill that tries to bring focus to the debate about what should the housing policy of the state of Alaska be is an important thing to recognize beyond just the importance of being able to access private or access the capital market. So, you know, I hear a lot of things being said today that I fundamentally agree with, but I don't think they're mutually exclusive, and I can't help but believe that it wouldn't be possible to bring a little more focus to the discussion about what is our public purpose and yet still be able to provide sufficient protection to AHFC to be able to access the markets after we decide what we want the money for, if I've made myself clear. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. Mr. Wolfert, while we have you here, what is your position on SB 163, and is a reporting requirement per se objectionable to the bond community or to AHFC, if you can speak to that?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, the position is that legislation on the question of what, in fact, is available for legislative appropriation, since the bill does, in fact, ask for amounts which are available for appropriation in the next fiscal year, that kind of legislation is encompassed in my earlier remarks, namely, it is something which is detrimental to the ongoing financing activities of the agency.
If we were to incorporate the criteria in 163 into House Bill 152, would that be responsive to the concerns you've identified?
That would meet that point of what is financial integrity, but it would not. My position would still be that we don't need and should not have, from a bond issuing point of view, any legislation on the subject matter.
Any at all?
None at all.
Thank you, Mr. Wolford.
I have a prepared statement for that, by the way.
Yes. Okay, I'm going to announce that House Bill 14, which is also up today, will be first bill up on Monday. So if you committee members have comments or concerns about that, be prepared first thing in the committee on Monday. And I also want to, at this time, allow Senator Adams' staff to give us an overview of Senate Bill 163, since it's a bill that's also going into subcommittee. Yes, we are.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to excuse myself at this time.
My intention is only to run for about 10 or 15 more minutes, Representative Larson. We do have some people from out of town who I want to try to...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Marla Berg, and I work for Senator Adams.
Senate Bill 163 is a very simple bill which just requires AHFC and ADA on an annual basis to tell the legislature whether and to what extent they have excess assets. Under current law, they are both subject to the Executive Budget Act and are required to present complete audited accounting of assets to the legislature. 163 does impose an additional reporting requirement, and that is to notify the legislature on the amount needed to fulfill the purposes of the corporation and the amount, if any, that is available for appropriation by the legislature without damaging the financial integrity of the corporations. This bill only requires that corporations tell. It doesn't appropriate any money. Senator Adams feels that passage of this bill would allow the legislature to determine in a rational manner whether AHFC or ADA could produce on an annual basis a return to the state's original investment without in any way damaging the financial condition of either corporation. It doesn't cost them anything to provide us this information. It's just good public policy, and we should and it should have been required from the beginning. And that's it.
Thank you, Ms. Burke. Next person I'd like to call is Bobby Kaki. Is that proper? Close?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bobby Kaklen, and I represent Jackie Johnson, who is the president of the Association of Alaska Housing Authorities. She can't be here today, so I have a written testimony, copies of that's being passed out right now for your reference. I'll just take a couple minutes of your time. On behalf of the association, we are in support of House Bill 152-153. We feel that there needs to be some coordination with housing agencies and provision of policies. For those of you who don't know, the association is a membership of the 15 executive directors of the housing authorities throughout the state of Alaska. 14 of those housing authorities are Indian housing organizations, and one is a statewide public agency. As Indian housing organizations, we deal daily with rural Alaska problems. Such problems include insufficient insulation and foundation to overcrowding. 11 out of the housing authorities are in rural Alaska. These executive directors are especially behind House Bill 152 and 153 because they can help in the dire rural Alaska housing problems. We need to ensure that Alaskans get what is most important in life, and that's a safe, affordable, and viable home. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Cameron. I'm the Finance Director of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and I'd like to speak to those aspects of House Bill 152 and Senate Bill 163 that deal with the potential for reappropriation of funds back to the state of Alaska. I'd point out that the corporation is aware that there is a provision in our existing statutes for its assets to go back to the state of Alaska, and that it clearly states that that reversion is to occur when the debt of Alaska Housing has been retired. The corporation, as Mr. Woolforth pointed out, each time we access the capital markets, we present to those potential purchasers and other members of the financial markets the corporation's existing balance sheet. We give them full disclosure of our financial position, and in that, those statements that we make and the representations that we make, nowhere do we indicate that the state considers that it has a super lien or a first lien on the corporation's general obligation assets that it has. And additionally, as Mr. Hewlin pointed out, he said in most or in a number of transactions we have used our general obligation. And in fact, in each of the 80-plus financings that initially aggregated in excess of $8 billion, all of those were general obligations of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. So we have been in the capital market since 1972 with issues that do have included in the security to the bondholders everything that the corporation owns. point out that the concept of Alaska Housing's resources being totally available to it and under the control of Alaska Housing has been important in our access to the capital markets, and it's more than just looking at the looking at it from the standpoint of the bondholders and what they're actually delivered, since in many cases that's the end product of a lot of negotiations with other members of the capital markets. We routinely, particularly in the taxable market, have accessed that through transactions that have had letters of credit or other forms of credit enhancement, bond guarantees that are there. And in those cases particularly, those entities have placed an awful lot of emphasis on the other assets of the corporation. The reliance of the capital markets on our general assets is exemplified by a commercial paper program that AHFC implemented in 1986, that we started selling commercial paper in the European markets. The corporation at first looked at the domestic U.S. commercial paper market and was determined that we could not access that market. It wasn't a matter of interest rate. It was just not accessible because of the lack of ratings on the corporation. We approached the rating agencies with a request for ratings on the corporation at that time, short-term ratings for the commercial paper program. They were unable to respond because they were not sure what rating approach to take for a public entity that did not have taxing powers. And I'm happy to announce today that the corporation has achieved ratings on that commercial paper program. Just today, Moody's has rated it P1, which is prime one. That's their top short-term rating. And that rating is based solely on the corporation's general obligation and the resources that we have that stand behind that. Another financing that we did here within the last year that certainly took advantage of the resources that we have was a transaction that consolidated foreclosed properties out of the various bond issues that those foreclosed properties were within, enabled us to save in excess of $30 million in holding costs on that. It required not only the general obligation of the corporation, but to enable us to do it, we had to contribute substantial resources. Another transaction was a refunding of insured mortgage bonds, 1980 second and third series. It was over $200 million of debt that we refinanced. To do that, we had to bring up to an actuarial level of soundness the state mortgage insurance fund. That required a contribution on the corporation's part of about $27 million. The corporation, not only does it count on additional funds being available or general obligation funds being available, but we routinely use those funds. Now, there's been some discussion of the $194 million. Unfortunately, the request was made to simply update the information that was included in the original Ernst & Young report. That the appropriate number for the update of that report was $194 million. That $194 million does not represent funds that are available to go anywhere. It represents net unrestricted assets that at any given point in time can be invested in a variety of different things. It includes all of the corporation's working capital. Included in that $194 is about $87 million of short-term investment securities. In addition, the $194 includes $72 million of mortgage loans that have been purchased by the corporation and converted to mortgage-backed securities, either Fannie Mae MBSs, Ginnie Mae certificates, or Freddie Mac participation certificates. And those would be targeted to be funded out of bond proceeds, generally where we have already sold those bond issues. Additionally, $94 million of that was invested in mortgage loans that were in the process of being put into mortgage-backed securities, and about $10 million of it is represented by claims receivable. The total of that equals about $267 million, which is higher than the $194. The $194 is net of a liquid fund equity requirement that we have in one of our financing agreements. So the 267 total is kind of the total that we have in our working capital available funds, and it generally is kept working. So the amount that the corporation has available to continue to operate its programs is really that $87-88 million. And from that, if demand increases and we need to purchase mortgage loans or an increasing number of mortgage loans, if there is a another program similar to the HOPE program where we had a rush of activity in a very short period of time, that $87 million would be drawn down substantially. The corporation has, as I pointed out, a Euro commercial paper program. It's in the amount of $150 million. In order for us to operate our HOPE program, not only did we tap out the $150 million, which is similar to a line of credit there, we had to ask our board of directors to increase it up to $200 million, and in fact took the commercial paper up to $198 million at its peak. So at times, to answer one of the questions that was asked here, how much of that or how over time, how has that amount been needed to be? It's gone negative is the answer. It's gone negative to the tune of $198 million at times. That's pretty much it for my prepared remarks. I'm happy to answer any questions that...
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cameron, how much in reserves or how much of your working capital is needed to get a new bond issue for mortgage loans? Is it an automatic thing that there has to be reserves committed for that if it's not a subsidized loan package?
If it's not subsidized, it's a fairly modest amount up front. It might be slightly higher. Typically, say it's a $100 million bond issue, it would require maybe $5 to $7 million to be set aside during the acquisition period when the mortgage portfolio is being acquired, with a portion of that able to be released at the end of that acquisition period. And then on a subsidized basis, it varies depending upon the structure of the bond issues. At times, the corporation trades off the amount of upfront capital that's required to do the transaction for a lower interest rate. Frequently that's the way that it works out. If we contribute a little more upfront or allocate a little more upfront to over-collateralize it or to additionally secure it, we're able to achieve a lower interest rate. So there isn't a direct formula that you can apply to it.
Thank you. And of the $87 to $88 million that I understood you to say was available for programs, what kind of programs are you referring to? Loans, grants, subsidies for low income or special needs? Is that the type of program you're speaking of?
Currently, the three major programs that involve bond financing are our taxable program, the tax-exempt program for first-time homebuyers, and the tax-exempt program for veterans. In addition to that, the corporation has committed a variety of funds to special programs for condominiums. Right now we have Mr. Hewlin mentioned, we have a program that we are working on that would provide bridge financing for condos that has been announced as a $40 million program. That $40 million would come directly out of the $80 million, but it's intended that, as the name implies, that it would be bridge financing and that the projects would ultimately become eligible for insurance from the mortgage insurers and therefore would eventually be funded into regular bond issues. So it's kind of a warehousing type program. As far as commitments to, I'm sorry if you could repeat the last part of your question, how much is committed to?
I was just unclear what programs you're referring to, and you've mentioned the major programs that you're now doing. I'm wondering to what extent there is money available or the agency's intention with respect to meeting other needs that have not been met in the past for low income or special needs housing, such as we've been discussing here today.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, that question is one that the board is currently addressing, as Mr. Hewlin indicated. It's something that just within the last 60 days we are becoming increasingly concerned about and included in the corporation's agenda for its next board meeting is consideration of a multifamily program of the type that would facilitate the the project that's being proposed by Anchorage Neighborhood Housing Services. That total project is estimated at $10 million with a potential participation by the corporation in the form of a second mortgage loan that is not expected to be financeable. It would be one that the corporation would be funding, would be somewhere around $2.7 million. The corporation has allocated about $5 million for its condominium stabilization expenses. We have a non-conforming allocation of about $2 million for 91. Our mobile home program is funded by direct loans and is not financeable. That's about $2 million. And we have a second mortgage program that we do not fund with bond money. That's about $2 million. And, you know, just I guess the point is the corporation has several programs that are not bond financed. So while we are certainly concerned about continued access to the markets, point would be that we do entertain programs, we do operate programs that don't directly involve financing, that are somewhat of a non-standard or non-traditional type.
Other questions? Representative Copeland. Yes. I'm not sure whom I should address this to, but I've just gone through the survey of state and local housing trust fund programs, and I only found one of them that's on the Boston, which is on the list of troubled public housing authorities, and that one doesn't use the trust fund approach or the income stream. What is the problem with setting up a trust fund from which these programs would be financed? Has the corporation ever looked at that as a mechanism to provide some stability in these programs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Copeland, I don't believe the corporation has a problem with the concept of a trust fund or the concept of allocating funds for particular programs. I think most of the concern expressed here is the method by which the funds are getting into the trust fund and the language in the bill that takes amounts in excess of the $100 million to be placed in the trust fund and specifies that those are available to be reappropriated to the general fund. The reappropriation language, as I indicated previously, is something that is kind of a threshold issue, a reappropriation prior to the bonds going away. With as much debt as the corporation having outstanding, with having made the representations that it has, with having pledges and bond issues where the corporation is charged with protecting the assets that have been pledged to the bondholders, raising the question as to whether the board could even, in fact, with an appropriation being made, honor that appropriation and transfer the funds, or whether it has a higher fiduciary responsibility to the existing bondholders prior to it. So we have looked at the trust fund. I think that's a...
Those sound perilous, like the arguments that Robert Moses used to present in New York for helping bankrupt the city. But I have to, you know, looking at this list, I do find that there are several agencies in different states and cities that do use this mechanism for funding those, and they are not the ones that are listed on the troubled public housing. Maybe the sum is too large, but the mechanism does not seem to preclude HUD or other participation. I will grant that most of the states use something like a real estate transfer tax, but as you know, we cannot dedicate a tax to a given purpose. So we're either faced with this choice or of putting a general fund amount to capitalize it. And we have used considerable amount of general fund to capitalize the last public finance national already. So what other source do you suggest?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Copeland, I think back to, I don't know which year it was, the year that they established the Alaska Housing Finance Revolving Fund, and some of these similar concerns were expressed that, you know, we have this asset, you know, it should be used for housing, how can we protect it? And the revolving fund, one of the ideas behind it was to help remove a question of dedicated funds, but additionally to make it clear that these funds are intended to be used and reused for housing-type purposes and to encourage the corporation to continue. And here with the trust fund, it seems that we're taking it one step further and in an attempt to better define the use of those funds and to make sure that the low to moderate and special housing needs are met. And I think that those concerns can certainly be met and that HFC can allocate funds for it. I think we would like the opportunity to take the initiative and to do that, to allocate those resources and to look at those programs.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess my comment is that with respect to how much discretion and authority HFC has and whether or not the legislature or HFC and the board ought to be the ones making decisions about grants and other types of new programs, I'm not sure who is best suited for that, but it does cause me a little bit of concern. Further questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Cameron. I only have one other person left signed up here. Testified Jim McCormick.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to point out this document was issued a year ago in January and raises many of the points, and I don't remember seeing either of the agencies responding to that.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here who wanted to testify today on the bills before us? If not, the House Bill 152 and House Bill 153 and Senate Bill 163 are referred to a subcommittee. Representative Ulmer, Chair, Representative Brown, Representative Larson, and Representative Barnes. And without objection, the committee is adjourned.